We're studying this morning in the book of Genesis, chapter 34. Genesis, chapter 34. We have in this chapter this morning the ongoing saga in Jacob's life, as we would certainly determine that he's in a place that he ought not to be. He's not yet gone back to Bethel, where the Lord has asked him to go and directed him to go, and where God promised to bless him in a return to that place. He's turned aside, and it's, I think we can certainly see the truth of the matter is ourselves in a lot that's going on in Jacob's life at this time, and in that we sometimes get content where we are and are satisfied with the status quo, and if everything's just going along relatively smooth, we don't see any need of going anywhere else. But the truth of the matter is that Jacob's going to find out that it sure would have been a lot better to have gone somewhere else, and he's going to experience tragedy in his life. And there's some things here that we will discuss this morning. I think it'll be a maybe a help to us and an encouragement to us as we look at it, and always keep in mind that there, to every action, there is a reaction or a consequence that we must face. And so Jacob will run into problems in his particular experience, and yet in it all, it will be good in that it will drive him out of the place where he is to go back to Bethel, to the place of the house of God. So let's read this chapter in its entirety, then we'll come back and deal with it, and then we'll open this class and opportunity for discussion. It said, "And Dinah, the daughter of Leah, which she bare unto Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land. And when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, prince of the country, saw her, he took her and lay with her and defiled her. And his soul clave unto Dinah, the daughter of Jacob. He loved the damsel and spake kindly unto the damsel. Shechem spake unto his father Hamor, saying, Give me this damsel to wife. And Jacob heard that he had defiled Dinah, his daughter. Now his sons were with his cattle in the field, and Jacob held his peace until they were come. Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out unto Jacob to commune with him. And the sons of Jacob came out of the field when they heard it. And the men were grieved, and they were very wroth, because he had wrought folly in Israel in lying with Jacob's daughter, which thing ought not to be done. Hamor communed with them, saying, The soul of my son Shechem longeth for your daughter. I pray you give her him to wife. Make ye marriages with us, and give your daughters unto us, and take our daughters unto you. And ye shall dwell with us, and the land shall be before you. Dwell and trade ye therein, and get you possessions therein. Shechem said unto his father and unto her brethren, Let me find grace in your eyes, and what ye shall say unto me, I will give. Ask me never so much dowry and gift, and I will give according as ye shall say unto me. But give me the damsel to wife. And the sons of Jacob answered Shechem and Hamor his father deceitfully, and said, Because he had defiled Dinah their sister. And they said unto them, We cannot do this thing, to give our sister to one that is uncircumcised, for that were a reproach unto us. But in this will we consent unto you, if you will be as we be, that every male of you be circumcised. Then will we give our daughters unto you, and we will take your daughters to us. We will dwell with you, and will become one people. But if you will not hearken unto us to be circumcised, then will we take our daughter, and we will be gone. And their words pleased Hamor and Shechem, Hamor's son. And the young man deferred not to do the thing, because he had delight in Jacob's daughter. He was more honorable than all the house of his father. Hamor and Shechem, his son, came unto the gate of their city and communed with the men of their city, saying, These men are peaceable with us. Therefore let them dwell in the land and trade therein, for the land, behold, it is large enough for them. let us take their daughters to us for wives, and let us give them our daughters. Only herein will the men consent unto us for to dwell with us, to be one people. If every male among us be circumcised as they are circumcised, shall not their cattle and their substance and every beast of theirs be ours? Only let us consent unto them, and they will dwell with us. And unto Hamor and Shechem, his son, hearkened all that went out of the gate of his city. Every male was circumcised, all that went out of the gate of his city. And it came to pass on the third day, when they were sore, that two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, took each man his sword and came upon the city boldly and slew all the males. And they slew Hamor and Shechem, his son, with the edge of the sword, and took Dinah out of Shechem's house and went out. The sons of Jacob came upon the slain and spoiled the city, because they had defiled their sister. They took their sheep and their oxen and their asses and that which was in the city and that which was in the field, and all their wealth and all their little ones and their wives took they captive and spoiled even all that was in the house. And Jacob said unto Simeon and Levi, ye have troubled me to make me to stink among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites, and I being few in number, they shall gather themselves together against me and slay me, and I shall be destroyed, I and my house. And they said, should he deal with our daughter, or with our sister, as with a harlot? And so in this chapter now, it is very graphic, it is very descriptive, and certainly it is a sad scene that we see in view of all that's going on in Jacob's life, and to know that Jacob could have been at Bethel at this time and saved himself a lot of heartache. That's probably true in our own lives. There's places we could have been and we ought to have been that we weren't at a particular given time, and consequently it has cost us something in our own lives as well. But let's look at this thought for a moment. First thing I'll point out is that what the world looks at as okay is certainly something distinct and different from that which the child of God knows to be right. From the standpoint of the custom of the day, what Hamor, or Shechem rather, the son of Hamor did, as far as the inhabitants of the land are concerned, it was not anything that was drastic or tragic or wrong as far as they are concerned. I mean, Dinah went out to meet the daughters of the land just to make friends. Every one of us likes to have somebody that we can count a friend, and we enjoy the company of someone else, and no doubt Dinah was not any different than any other young lady. She would like to have somebody of her own peer group to fellowship with. She's in a house with 11 brothers, and there are no other sisters, and that would be quite an experience. So it was not uncommon for her to go out in the field. And what Shechem did was not anything that was not unheard of in the land. We live in a society today that has accepted a lot of things that you and I know to be wrong. It's not uncommon today to find people that will live together without the sanction of marriage, and the world by and large has accepted this as a way of life and something that is not abnormal, but to us it is abnormal because it is contrary to the Word of God. And so we see that there's a conflict and a contrast between what God says is right and what the world says is right. And so we see actually this ongoing story that Shechem and Hamor, they don't see anything that they've done that is really outlandishly wrong. They make the right presentation. They want to settle this thing in a peaceable manner as far as they're concerned. But on the other side of the coin, then it's a different story with Jacob and his house. But again, I come to the premise that the world standard will always be different than the Lord's standard. And we need to keep that in mind. It's oftentimes easy just to let the standard lower and lapse
and not uphold that which is right. I mean, it becomes commonplace to us, and yet we dare not let the things of this world become commonplace to us, nor do we let the world dictate to us. Now, as time progresses, from the standpoint of fundamental independent Baptists, we will become more peculiar, certainly in the society in which we live. The world is changing its standard. It's looking at morals in a different light than we will. And so don't think it's strange, because it will come. And the world will always, again, set a different standard and a lower standard than we do. But secondly, then, let's notice the area where Jacob has gone to and some consequences of choices in life. We preached last Sunday morning on a father's choice, and a dedicated father saying, "As for me and my house, we'll serve the Lord." That was Joshua that made that kind of a statement late in his life, and had exemplified that in all of his life, really, that he had lived for the Lord. We challenged the folks again on the radio yesterday from the same scripture with a little different approach, that we're faced with important choices in life, and therefore, we need to make the right choices. Well, Jacob made a choice. I mean, from a world standpoint, it looked like it's pretty well. He built a house in one place. He came here and was able to buy a field, and he pitched a tent, a good pasture land, and he's progressing. He's making money. So the world would say, well, what's wrong with such a choice as this? The first thing that's wrong with it is not the place of the house of God. I'm persuaded that if we're going to make a choice in our lives about a place to live, we need to make that choice with one thing in mind. What is there in that place from a spiritual standpoint? Is there a place, is there a church that we could go to that we would find our satisfaction in from a spiritual standpoint? Is there a ministry there that can feed our souls? Certainly that will be the first consideration in our lives when we make a move. Now, the only option to that, of course, is if a family chose to go into an unreached area and to establish a witness in that area. That's a different story. But from a standpoint of people making a choice, sometimes there will be men that will be employed by a company. They'll have opportunity to transfer and to do well. And they'll make that choice, never even considering the area that they're moving their family to, and the fact that there is either no Christian influence or a perverted Christian influence in that area. What I'm talking about is false doctrine. So we need to always consider the area that we go to and live in with regard to what it can do for us spiritually. There are more important things than money. I know we have to have it. It's a commodity that we need. City Public Service, they like for me to pay the bill every month. The San Antonio Water Board, they want me to pay every month. It takes a certain amount of money, but Jesus said a man's life does not consist in the abundance of the things that he possesses. And we need to understand that there's a whole lot more to life than what we might just amass as far as this world's wealth is concerned. And Jacob, from a worldly standpoint, seems to be prospering, but there's going to be severe consequences because of the choice that he made. This is not the place of Bethel. This is not the place that he pillowed his head on a stone and God gave him the vision of the ladder that reached from all heaven all the way down to earth, and the angel of God ascending and descending on it, and the place of God's promise. There are some places that we need to consider in our lives, and some things that we need to consider in our life. And so Jacob has made his choice basically on the basis of this looks like a good place to live for my cattle. It looks like I might make some money here. I might prosper and I might do well. But the tragedy is that there is an influence here. And there are natural inclinations that are going to go on in a person's life. For example, let's look at Dinah. Again, we mentioned it's not unnatural for her to want a peer group. You might have noticed at times, I have noticed children that are brought up around adults and not have any children around them, they will take on characteristics that are not really fitting to the age that they really are. And sometimes we might, on the other hand, have some that need to grow up more. But the children usually like to have a peer group, those of their own age. And Dinah, again, is not any different than any daughter that we might know of any other believer. If they were in a, cast into an area that there were not any others, it would be a common thing to go out to the inhabitants of the land. And friendship is not wrong in and of itself. But the friendships that we develop can become wrong because they influence us wrong. The daughters of the land have a different standard than Jacob should have been holding in his own home. And so choices that we make certainly affect us very gravely and deeply in life. And in this particular case, Jacob has made the choice, and we do not minimize Dinah's part nor Shechem's part in this, but Jacob is at the root of this matter. He's made a choice in his life to live here in this particular place, and in the, actually where the city is called Shechem, after that particular person. And these, likely Shechem and Hamor again, were probably titles that were passed on from generation to generation. And they would be fitted to the father and the son that would be the responsible leaders in that area. And they then, of course, assuming that name and are the influencing factors in the place. But nonetheless, this land is going to influence Jacob because he's made the choice. And as Dinah goes out, then Shechem will behold her, and he will literally take her. There are societies that would see really nothing majorly wrong with this. There are other societies that go to a far different extreme, but the custom of the day and what was going on, I mean, they did not seem to be excited or moved by the fact that there might have been wrong done here, but it does disturb Jacob because he does know the Lord. And so, again, we see him cast into a situation where there's going to be something arise. Now, let's look at Jacob again for a moment at this time. I mean, let's keep in mind the experiences that this man has had. He's, of course, had to leave home, but he had the experience of the vision at Bethel. He then went to Laban's house, and he saw God's protection in his life and blessing in his life. As even though Laban would try to beat him, God would see to it that he was that everything turned to his favor. Whenever he left under a cloak of darkness, if you please, and slipped away from Laban, and Laban came with intent to harm him, God protected him. And there, after that particular encounter with Laban, then he saw the host of the Lord. He literally saw the angels of God as they stood in his defense around him. That would be precious to see that. It was Elisha, remember, on one occasion, that was in the face of an advancing enemy army. His servant got all excited, and Elisha just prayed and said, "Lord, let him see the Lord's host. Let him see those that are encamped around about us." And whenever that man's eyes were open, he saw the host of the Lord that was encamped in the hills round about Elisha and him. And there was great protection for him that he had no concept of. And so when Jacob saw the host of the Lord, he saw God's protecting force in his behalf. And he came then on forward and came to the brook, and there he, the angel of the Lord wrestled with him, and did not prevail in his life, touched his thigh, and the sinew shrank, and he was halt. Then he clave to the angel of the Lord and asked for the blessing, and received it. So he had tremendous experiences. Do you think that anybody with any kind of experiences would go forward and never go backward again? That to be able to just call upon the resources of those experiences and find their strength. But that's not the case. We need to live fresh in the Lord day by day, because past experiences do not suffice for today's encounters nor the future's experiences. And so we need to remember that we need that place of fellowship with the Lord daily in our lives. And here Jacob has had a tremendous experience, and you'd think, my, he'd be a spiritual man, but he's not. You'll notice, first of all, that again, he's lapsed into that condition of somewhat selfishness. Whenever he came in or he heard about this, his sons being out in the field, he held his peace because he was afraid. He didn't feel like that he could say anything, even though he'd been wrong and his daughter had been wrong. He felt like that he was unprotected and he was concerned about self. And even later on, whenever Simeon and Levi will go on this killing rampage that they perpetrate, and he'll say, you've made me to stink in the nostrils of the inhabitants of the land. He was concerned about himself and where he was. You see, he was content to stay in this particular place, Shechem. And he wanted to stay there. But he said, now, since you've made me stink in the nostrils of the inhabitants, I can't stay here. So we see that this man is not on the spiritual plane that he ought to be. And lest we just look at him with disdain and all, let's keep in mind ourselves and understand that we're made of the same stuff. And there'll be times in our lives that we'll lapse. But anyway, let's look at the situation a little farther, as the worldling now has taken a liking to Jacob's daughter. After he has lain with her, he's defiled her. He loves her. I think probably it was a genuine love as far as the world is concerned. I don't know that we can honestly love like we ought to love until we know the Lord. I'm not sure that that humanity has the capacity to love like they ought to until they know the Lord. But this man, Shechem, at least from a worldly standpoint, loves Dinah. He wants to have her as a wife. And so they go through the necessary moves to acquire such a relationship. Hamor will be the negotiator. And again, keep in mind the Eastern culture, that this is not something that's foreign even yet to the Eastern culture, to negotiate marriages. So happened whenever I was in Africa that this is still a very common practice, to negotiate marriages. It's there are men and women that live their entire lifetime. You ask me how it works, I don't know how it works, but it seems to work for them. The only thing I can say is when I ask Ed Coffey about it, I said, how does this work? Does it work well? He said, oh, yes. He said, it works real well. He said, beauty will blind the eyes of youth, but he said, it won't the mother and dad. And said, they'll negotiate a good marriage and find a good wife. And he was content with his wife, and it was a negotiated marriage, and so I would not discourage him from that. I don't know whether he'll make arrangements for his children or not. That'll be another story. But there are places that such goes on. So we see the negotiation begin in this particular case, and Shechem makes a tremendous offer. He said, just ask me what you will, ever so much dowry, just whatever you say. The old farmer used to say that there used to be money in kids, and not money in kids anymore. there were times, and there were certain things that were offered for a good wife. I remember Jacob labored 7 years for each one of his wives. I mean, that's a pretty good dowry to pay. 7 years, especially if you're a pretty good worker. 7 years of dowry, there's got to be a lot of love there to labor 7 years for a wife. I think we studied that. I asked if anybody labored 7 years here, and nobody had. And Steve said, well, he'd labor 7 years afterwards. But not before. But we see the negotiations began, and the dowry is offered, and it's at Jacob's discretion. But it'll not be the case, first of all, because this is not God's will. It has never been God's will for the children of God to marry the sons and the daughters of this world. There certainly, whenever Paul wrote to the Corinthian church and said, be not unequally yoked together, it went farther than the marriage relationship, but it does include the marriage relationship. And in fact, it includes
the majority, in fact, all of the relationships of our life. If you were to ask me this morning, is it wise for a Christian man to go in business with an unsaved man? I say no. Even though it might look profitable, it might look like it'd be successful, it's just not good business from the standpoint of the Christian, because there's a different philosophy. And in a home, there'll be a different philosophy, regardless. We can see it already. I mean, there's a conflict of cultures already in this particular relationship, even though it was forced upon Dinah. Nonetheless, situation arises here. The offer of dowry is made, and then we notice that there's a deceit on the part of Jacob and his sons after they've come in and the negotiations began. And they point out that the only way that they would ever marry the daughters of that land and they would receive then the daughters of that land for wives would be if all the males were circumcised. Now, that goes back to the Abrahamic covenant and the sign of that covenant that God has given. It is basically just a circumcision of the foreskin as it was described to Abraham. And they said, we could not give our sister, or as Jacob would say, my daughter, unto one that is not circumcised. This would be a reproach to us. It would be wrong. And so we see then that Shechem and Hamor are agreeable with this. Now we notice that the Bible gives credit where credit is due. This Shechem is certainly is, as the Bible said, more honorable than Hamor and all of his house. In other words, there must have been a measure of integrity in this young man that was not in the, by and large, the people of that city. Lest we think of Jacob's sons as just assassins and think that they went out and killed innocent people, understand that we'll see that there was a that they were not a bastion of morals on the other side here. But the Bible did give credit to Shechem that he was a more honorable than all of his father's house. In other words, he was had a measure of integrity about him, but Hamor is not that kind of a person, and those men of the city are not that kind of people. You'll notice that they want to enter into this covenant and accept the sign of the Abrahamic covenant upon them, not because they want to embrace the God of Abraham, not for any benefit from a spiritual standpoint, but their eyes are upon the herds of Jacob. And that's the thing that Hamor will convince the men of the city and said, let's just go ahead and enter into this thing because said everything they've got will be ours before long. Whenever our daughters marry into that, then all that will belong to us. That leads me to a point I think that we need to make. That sometimes folks enter into a religious exercise with the wrong motive. Now we try to here to baptize folks on the basis of their faith in the Lord Jesus Christ. The folks that come forward, we ask them if they have a personal faith in Jesus Christ, and they're willing to confess that. And when they do, then we accept them on that basis. We do not go into when I was in Bible college years ago, there was a fellow, and there's always a few of the students who are going to build a perfect church somewhere. And he had it in his mind he was going to put people through a grueling 6 months training classes before he'd ever baptize them. There's two things wrong with that. First of all, I don't know whether they'd stand it or I could stand it. And secondly, it's not scriptural. You'll find the New Testament practice was to accept folks on the basis of their confession of faith in Jesus Christ without condition. In other words, if they made it what appeared to be an honest confession, they were baptized. And in spite of the fact that we ask folks when they come, sometimes we do, we'll have one that will prove out to be something else. And for whatever reason they might have come, there have been people that have joined churches. They've had as they would term it in their experience, a baptism for whatever reason. I remember back in the 50s, whenever Eisenhower was candidating for the presidency. And at that time, it was popular for a president to have a faith. It ought to be required today of have a real faith. By the way, let me just throw this in and I'll go on. In the founding fathers' eyes, if a person was an unbeliever, he was not fit for public office. You can find that in history. of this nation.
Because they knew that he would not have the morals he ought to have and so forth. That's, I give you that free. Doesn't charge a thing for that this morning. But anyway, Eisenhower, before the campaign or actually the election, he joined, I think it was a Presbyterian church, because it was appropriate for a president to have a church. He had no church affiliation or church home before that. And so he joined the Presbyterian church to have a church affiliation. Now, I hope it was real in his life. I'm not saying I'm passing judgment on it, but that to me would have been rather a flimsy excuse just to so that I'd look good in the campaign. Now, I don't think that's the right reason for certain things. And in this particular case here, Hamor and his men are circumcised not because they want to embrace the God of Abraham to come under the covenant blessing that was promised to Abraham, but they look at Jacob's cattle and say, we want his cattle. Well, there have been men that have joined churches for political advantage, for financial advantage, various reasons why they might have gone even through a baptismal waters and supposedly been baptized. There's various reasons. But there's only one real reason to do that, which is in this case, a sign of a covenant. And baptism is, in a sense, a seal of a covenant that God has made with himself, that he would save all those who believe. Baptism has a particular place in the life of the believer. And it is to represent some things and to declare some things in the administrating of that particular ordinance. But I don't want to get into that. That's not the point. I want to point out that there are things that are done that are supposedly have a religious connotation for the wrong reasons. And in this case, they were circumcised, but it was for the wrong reasons. They were wanting the wealth of Jacob and his sons. And so they submitted to this, and they agreed to it. And then we noticed the sons of Jacob. I don't want to go into a discourse on family life, but we see some things that have haunted this family for years. And the basis of a dysfunctional home, some things that have influenced the children. There are some young men here that do not have any qualms about taking life. They've come out of hard circumstances. This is some of those, you know, that felt unwanted because Jacob certainly demonstrated, apparently before his family, that he loved Rachel more than Leah. I mean, this Bible information here is not anything that we'll have to assume. And so these sons would have felt a measure of rejection, and no doubt, and they were fierce men. They were men that would not hesitate to take life. And so, as the Bible said here, on the third day, they took advantage because these men would not be able to stand and fight. They just literally went into the city and assassinated every man in the city. Do you see the consequences of Jacob's choice? What it has brought in his life? I mean, it's a chain reaction. We do not minimize the actions of the individuals themselves, but we look back to one man that made a choice. And what is born in the life of his sons and his daughter. And the consequences that he's going to bear. And he himself will say, well, now I'm made to stink in the nostrils of the inhabitants of the land. This may cost me my life. He said, they'll rise up and they'll come in an armed horde and they'll take my life. Well, he can lay the thing at his own feet because he made the choice. Instead of going back to Bethel where he belonged. Now we'll get him back to Bethel. In the next chapter, thank God that he always takes care of his own and brings his own to the place of blessing. But these sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, full brothers now to Dinah, they go into the city and they literally just assassinate all of these men of that city. And then all of Jacob's sons get into this thing and they plunder the city. And they take the flocks and they take the children. And they take the wives and they enslave them. In other words, they're brought into bondage, servitude to these. And they take them. And then Jacob will chide with Simeon and Levi, but they will say, should he deal with our sister as with a harlot? And so they say, basically to this effect, Dad, is there not a cause? I mean, there was a reason for this. Well, whether it's justifiable to the extreme that they went or not, there was a reason for it.
their sister had been defiled. And it cost those men of that city dearly for their action. But it also cost Jacob because he had made the choice. You always have to come back to the man Jacob. And God is presenting to us this man. I come back, I suppose, if we were going to draw just a conclusion this morning, I want to say that the decisions we make in my life and the choices we make, they don't just end with that choice in the immediate circumstance, but it may go on even for generations. Things are choices are made that affects a family for generations. And I remember reading the story, and I wish I knew where I could find it and go back and review it again. There was a man that made a choice in his life to pray for his family. And that man asked God for three generations in the future. Somebody, from a historical standpoint, then went back and looked at that family. And out of that family had come men that were preachers, men that were honest political leaders, doctors, men that helped society. I mean, as it was looked upon, this man who had been faithful to pray for his family, God answered that prayer. And this man is dead and gone and passed off of the scene, but there's still reaction to that man's choice in life. And so it can work both ways. We may make a bad choice and it affects not only our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, but on the other hand, we can make the right choice and it certainly can affect them as well. And I think the first choice, of course, is to do our best to bring our children to the Lord and then to bring them under the ministry of the Word of God and let it have its effect upon the generations to come. But we see the tragedy of the child of God who makes the choices that are wrong choices in life. And then on the other hand, thank God there are some right choices that are made now and then and bear consequence as well.